phone records, financial and location data, Prism, Tempora, X-Keyscore, Boundless Informant. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for offnow.org. Now, here's the deal. Due to the Snowden revelations, we have a great opportunity for a short period of time to get some real rollback of the national surveillance state. Now, they're already trying to tire us by introducing fake reforms in the Congress. And the courts, they betrayed their sworn oaths to the Constitution and Bill of Rights again and again, and can in no way be trusted to stop the abuses for us. We've got to do it ourselves. How? We nullify it at the state level. It's still not easy, but the Off Now project of the 10th Amendment Center has gotten off to a great start. I mean it. There's real reason to be optimistic here. They've gotten their model legislation introduced all over the place, in state after state. I've lost count, more than a dozen. You're always wondering, yeah, but what can we do? Here's something. Something important. Something that can work if we do the work. Get started cutting off the NSA support in your state. Go to offnow.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show here. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org. LibertyRadioNetwork.com. All right, you may have seen this article. It went viral around the internet over the weekend. Anyway, we ran as the spotlight on antiwar.com. 5 Israeli talking points on Gaza debunked. And this is no, BuzzFeed, hack job. This is a, because the 5, the list, don't be turned off by the list. That's what I'm trying to say here. This is really great stuff here, and I hope you've already taken a look at it. The author is Nora Erekat, and she is a human rights attorney and activist, Abraham L. Friedman Fellow at Temple University, Beasley School of Law, and a contributing editor of Jadalia, I think, something like that. And this is at thenation.com. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. I sure appreciate you joining us today. And so this is a very important article, as I was trying to get across there, however, clumsily. I really do hope people look at it. Again, 5 Israeli talking points on Gaza debunked and thoroughly, I might add. And if it's okay with you, Nora, I'd like to start with number 5, because this is the one that I think is, well, it's as important as any of the others, but it's the one that is the least addressed of all of them, I think. And you do a very good job of handling the question, the accusation, that Hamas hides all their weapons in homes full of civilians. They use the people of the Gaza Strip as human shields. And they kind of leave this out. It's kind of silent but included. And so, therefore, it's okay to kill the civilians because, you know, hey, what are we supposed to do if there are civilians between us and our enemies? Is kill them too, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think that you're hitting on something really critical here, which is the discourse belies the humanity of Palestinians. What it says is that Israel has an objective. It has an a military objective, and whatever stands in the way is really irrelevant. And that, of course, only carries any water if we accept that humanity is exceptional and only includes one people and not all people. And so now the death toll has reached 1,106 Palestinians. 80% of that number are civilians. That means 80% have not picked up arms, have not participated in any military activity, have not participated in anything that threatens Israel's security. And 200 of those are children, right? And rather than completely this just being abominable and unacceptable under any circumstances, the discourse is one that attempts to obfuscate this either in racist rhetoric, suggesting that Hamas is hiding amongst these civilians or that Hamas is using the dead in order to bolster its morality in the war, or that Palestinians themselves have a culture of martyrdom and seek to die. So either we're discussing this in racist lens to rationalize why so many Palestinians have been dead, or we're rationalizing it as a necessary evil because Israel had to attack military installations and civilians happen to be in the way. In both instances, what's happening is that we are allowing Israel to get away with absolutely no accountability, that somehow the well-being of Israeli people is necessary at all costs, and even at the cost of this dehumanization. Now, I'm saying this because I think it's really the most important point. The other point is the fact that this is just a talking point, right? That's what's being sold. That's what's being bartered. And unfortunately, you know, this has weight. And the reason I wrote the article is because I found that mainstream news anchors weren't challenging this either as a matter of morality, that it's either racist or just illogical, or as a matter of fact, the fact that it's just not true. Hamas's use of what they say is human shields, or Hamas shooting from densely populated civilian areas, does happen, but it happens as an exceptional case, not as a systematic one. So it cannot explain the high death toll, and even if it could explain it, it still does not justify the high death toll. But reports by Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, Physicians for Human Rights Israel, Breaking the Silence, a group of Israeli soldiers, as well as two UN reports in 1996 and another UN report in 2009, have all demonstrated that Israel targets civilians and that Hamas did not use civilians as human shields. Not a single news anchor has cited these reports. Not a single news anchor has challenged an Israeli spokesperson or someone discussing these issues to say, but wait, where is the evidence? If all of these reports, if the UN and Israelis and human rights organizations are all saying that this is not true, that Israel targets civilians and Hamas is not human shields, then why should we believe you? And the only response that they're able to give is that because the Israeli army can show you pictures. But if you look at that, we are asked to believe an Israeli military force that is meting out destruction above everybody else in the international community. And this has not caused any kind of panic. I mean, it should cause panic, but it's not even causing alarm or pause.
Well, what pictures have they even released? The only pictures I've seen released by the Israelis are cartoons that just show, look, this is what a house with a Hamas and a kid and some weapons would look like if we lived in Simpsons land or something.
No, and this is what makes it even more difficult to digest, that what the Israeli army is producing wouldn't withstand judicial scrutiny. It only withstands public scrutiny because there are enough people that want to believe it. Mm-hmm. There are enough people that believe that Palestinian life is worth so little that this can possibly make any sense.
Well, you know, what happens too is
what's at the heart of this.
I think what happens because of the lack of evidence, just like when they were lying us into war with Iraq, what happens is people fill in the spaces themselves with their imagination based on the premise that what I'm hearing must be true. So then they just start imagining all Hamas fighters carrying civilians around with them or some kind of thing like that, hiding out in civilian homes just because they've heard it so much. They just imagine it. That fills in for the evidence as you're saying, as long as no one's contradicting it where they can hear it contradicted. Then it sounds like it's just perfectly true. You cite Human Rights Watch in your article here at thenation.com, and I saw one of their representatives, I believe it was their president, actually on CNN today, and he was saying, you know, that what they're doing is they're being really elastic with the definition, and they're trying to pretend that just the fact that Hamas is fighting in an urban area near civilians means that somehow they're using those civilians as shields. But that's just not true. And when it comes to any specific use of human shields and the actual definition of that term, there's no evidence of it whatsoever. As you point out, there is, in fact, evidence in the past of the Israelis tying Palestinians to the hoods of their trucks, literally using them as human shields. That's the only evidence we have of this at all in this entire conflict going back a couple years, but still.
No, I mean, I'm really, you know, happy to hear that there was some challenge of this. But what's happened and what's happened systematically is that there is a devaluation of Palestinian life. And the way that it functions in the U.S., the reason we don't even get to a discussion of, no one's asking, why would Hamas continue to shoot ineffective rockets that cause no military harm, right? and bears no military advantage, because if you're thinking about belligerence in warfare, there's no military advantage to these rockets, and yet there is severe consequences that Israel is allowed to get away with. Why would they continue that? Now, what Israel wants us to believe is that they would continue that because they're just irrational Jew haters, right? That we're supposed to believe that there are people that hate another people so much that they would do this even to the point of self-annihilation and self-sacrifice. You can only believe that if you believe that there are people like that in the world, and I feel that this is it's part of the manufacturing of Islamophobia, of manufacturing an image of Palestinians, of Arabs, who are actually Christians and Druze and other religions, right? But manufacturing them first all as Muslims, and then manufacturing all Muslims as irrational and as hell-bent on death and destruction and a clash of civilizations, which is not true. What we're missing is the context that Israel is occupying the Palestinian people and has been colonizing their land and colonizing their lives since 1948, and created a refugee population of 6.6 million, and has created a situation under military occupation and apartheid where Palestinians do not have horizons of actually fulfilling their life. They are not allowed to govern themselves, nor are they allowed basic freedoms like the freedom of mobility, the freedom of earning a livelihood, the freedom of an education, the freedom of work, the freedom of living with your family in stability. All of that has been denied to Palestinians systematically for decades. And in the Gaza Strip, we're seeing its worst form, because not only are they denied that, but the Gaza Strip has also been subject to an 8-year brutal siege that has impoverished the population to the point where 80% of the Palestinian population, we're talking about nearly 2 million people, 80% of them survive on food aid from humanitarian agencies just to survive. Not because they can't work, not because they don't want to, but because Israel has sealed the waters so that fishermen cannot fish. They've sealed the land borders so that Palestinians cannot travel for work. They've made the agricultural land into military buffer zones so that they cannot farm their land. They've prevented them from engaging in any kind of trade of import and export. The World Health Organization says that the Gaza Strip will be unlivable by the year 2020. That means in 6 years, Israel would have made the Gaza Strip an entirely barren land. It would have turned it into Mars, where human survival is impossible. And so why then, under these circumstances, would a people shoot these indiscriminate rockets at this high personal cost to themselves? Why aren't we asking that question? Because what it looks like is they have nothing left to lose. Does that mean that I think they should be doing it? No, but I'm at a loss of what they should be doing.
Yeah. Well,
what should they be doing?
I've been reading quotes from regular civilians there in Gaza who are saying that they support, and this, you know, you could have written the script, it's predictable enough, that they support, they're against the ceasefire on current terms. They would rather keep fighting, and if ceasefire means going back to the status quo and the siege, something has to give here. It's a living death. I've seen that a few times. I guess that's a talking point going around. But as you describe it, it's true, and it sure makes sense that this is, if it was a scam for how do you get the average schmo in Gaza to go ahead and end up supporting Hamas and violence, you do this. So that's exactly how to do it.
You know, well,
make
no,
them
but
this
even, like,
helpless
that,
and
that
hopeless.
Misses the point. That also misses the point that Hamas is a political party with a militant wing. And Hamas was only created in 1987. But Israel has been occupying the Gaza Strip since 1967. Mm. There was no Hamas for 20 years. And even after Hamas came into power, it wasn't as powerful as Yasser Arafat and Fatah and Abu Mazen, these Palestinian leaders of Fatah. And Israel has called them no partners for peace. They have not been interested, and they've always created a Palestinian boogeyman to avoid the main issue. Once Hamas emerged as actually the best boogeyman, they've now abandoned that. But even Palestinian president in the West Bank, who has been the most compliant Palestinian leader and has even participated with, coordinated with Israel's security to protect the settlers against Palestinians and to protect the occupation against Palestinians rather than to protect the Palestinians from occupation, there's no state either, and there are no rockets. And so we should be asking ourselves, what is actually going on? If the violence is the reason, is the problem, then why has peace and the security coordination and the most compliant Palestinian regime also been able to achieve nothing according to Israel? Why has Netanyahu said there will never be a two-state solution, even though Palestinians have cooperated and bent over backwards? And so the problem is with our news cycle is that rather than addressing these questions, we're lazily relying on racist assumptions. We're lazily pointing to the spectacle rather than dealing with the root causes. To actually, if we're interested in a viable solution, that's what we would be doing.
Mm-hmm. All right, now I know you're in a hurry, but then again, you sound like you like talking about this stuff. Can I ask you one more thing, or do you have to go?
You can ask me one more thing, but I do have to go, so it'll be a quick answer.
Okay, so as quickly as you can, I was hoping you could address point number two in your article here. Again, it's 5 Israeli talking points on Gaza debunked at thenation.com. Israel pulled out of Gaza in 2005. Now, without getting entirely into the Gaza bombshell article by David Rose and the attempted coup and all that, I was hoping that, because this just makes it take too long and too complicated, but I was hoping you could somehow fill in the gap. There's a very prominent Israeli talking point, of course, that, look, we withdrew from Gaza, and then, yeah, it's under siege now, but that's only because after we withdrew, paradise wasn't good enough for evil Hamas, and they just started launching rockets at us for no good reason. That was why
true.
We had to put them under the siege. So I was wondering if you could...
Palestinians have never enjoyed a day of self-rule. They withdrew their settlers from Gaza. They withdrew 8,000 settlers and the military that protected them from the Gaza Strip, which is
and
only
yet there wasn't a real full-scale siege
squared.
For a couple of years, right? So
no,
what about that meantime?
What
when
about,
there was
but
the election.
This is what I'm saying. They maintained control of the electromagnetic sphere, of the airspace, of the naval space, of the entries and the exits, of the population registry. They maintained the ability to reinvade at any time. Under international law, occupation does not require a military presence. It requires a military capability and the ability to exercise effective control. Even before the siege, Israel maintained that effective control, and Palestinians never governed themselves. Mm-hmm. The siege was imposed in January 2006. That is, between the time of Hamas's parliamentary victory and the siege was not even a few months. And in that interim, Israel maintained its effective control and its occupation. Palestinians have never governed themselves. That is an absolute talking point, and it is meant to obfuscate this reality.
Mm. Well, and then, well, hell, as long as we're at it, if you got 1 second, go ahead and talk about the Gaza bombshell, how America, Israel, and Egypt worked to arm Fatah to overthrow and do a coup against Hamas, and that was what ended up with Hamas having monopoly rule in Gaza. Well, as a subsidiary force to the IDF, of course, but that was what led to their monopoly as compared to Fatah, of course, and ended up getting Fatah kicked out of Gaza and back
well,
to
I
the
think
West
you
Bank.
Said it. I think you said it really well. I don't think there's anything there to add. That we have been involved. The U.S. has certainly been involved in intervening in ways that have been detrimental to bring about the results that we don't like, and then we don't like these results, and we make these really irresponsible decisions that have high civilian costs mm-hmm. to an entire population, and then we don't take responsibility for it, but we only make the situation worse.
Right. Okay, well, thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it, Nora.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate you for having me.
Okay, everybody, that is Nora Erekat. She's at thenation.com. 5 Israeli talking points on Gaza debunked. And what I was trying to say before is this isn't some flimsy listicle. This is a really good article for you, okay? 5 Israeli talking points on Gaza debunked in The Nation.
you hate government, one of them libertarian types, or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police, state, founders, quotes, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren's Coffee. Order now at darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and save $2. darrenscoffee.com.